Tejasvinavadhitamastu madhivishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, just bottom of 20, I mean, yeah, last verse on 21, paragraph. We find two varieties of human beings in this world. Udita viveka, those with spiritually awakened consciousness, and anudita viveka, those with slumbering consciousness. Amongst the second type, the brahmanas are the most advanced, and the secondary, nitya karma, prescribed for their caste, is the four monks amongst all mundane religious practices. Okay. So we're starting here with those who are awake and those who are not, those who are still asleep. Right? But slumbering here is not like necessarily totally deep sleep, you know, like that, you know, but pleasantly asleep. Like that. You know, so it's not necessarily snoring or anything. Yeah. Okay? So in here, then we're thinking, oh, okay, that's where then the top of that class, that's the Brahmins, right? And then their, secondary, their nitya karma, right? Because we're calling it secondary. Here's now where we're seeing the overlap of the definitions, because nitya is actually being defined as the spiritual. Right? Because that's what you actually do every day, eternally. Right? Now, you have nitya here within the material, right? Within the sleeping. That is what you do daily. But you'll do that daily until the body ends. Then you're going to go to another body, and then you have a different set of nitya. So it's not actually nitya. It's only nitya because you do it every day. Right? You know, for, you know, 80 years, 100 years. Right? So then there's secondary activities. You know, so these things, the naimittic, then this is the highest religious elements. Right? Within the material sphere. So the Brahminical culture of practice by those who are sleeping, you know, that is the highest within the mundane. Right, and then it just goes down step by step from there.
Right?
Yes.
I didn't really get it because nitya is what we do every day. Naimittic is our temporary duties.
Yes.
According to the conditioned nature.
And according to the conditioned nature, but the same time as then when you go look within conditioned nature. Mm-hmm. See. You're looking at two things. One, you're looking at the position of the soul, right? So it's a category, right? So according to the nature of the soul, nitya means spiritual, naimittic means the condition, right? So therefore, nitya means the one on that platform who's not conditioned, that's the udita viveka, right? And who's asleep, that's the anudita viveka, right? Udita means it's up. You know, and anu means it's small. Okay? So then, that's just the situation within the material, with whether there are, means you have the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is that it eternally serves Krishna. Right? That's its original position. Now, those who are, that they're the liberated. Those who are not, those are the conditioned. Right? So in other words, you have an overall definition for jivas, Then you have a specific for those who are liberated and those who are not. That's detail, right? Does that make sense? So now, in the overall, then the spiritual is the nitya, and the conditioned is the, yeah, the how you say, naimittic, the temporary, right? But then within the temporary, because someone within the temporary is not functioning within the spiritual, right? So for them, then they have their nitya and naimittic, because the concept has to be common. See, what you're trying to do, the Vedic system is, it's seamless. So it doesn't matter where you're situated, you're still following the general same process in principle, not in detail. Detail, it's totally different. But in principle, it's the same, right? Just like the Kali worshiper. He is following scripture. He doesn't make up his own process. He's following rituals that are set by scripture. He has his guru that teaches him in that scripture. He has his deity, right? There is the element of sacrifice. There's the element of austerity, charity. All that remains. It just happens to be in a more tamasic kind of environment. Right? Now, if he comes up to the mode of passion, you know, you take up the worship of Lord Brahma. Still, now the deity changes from Kali to Brahma, but you still have a deity. Right? The Shastras may change from Tamasic to Rajasic Shastra, but you still are based on Shastra. That's your authority. Your guru now is telling you about the Rajasic path instead of the Tamasic. So, but you still have a guru. Right? You still have sadhana. You're still going to get up early. You still are going to give in charity. You're still going to austerity, all these different things. Does that make sense? So the same definitions apply to all the positions. This is why there's a problem that we'll see, but there's an overlap. So within the mundane, we don't notice it as much, right? Because we'll say, oh, well, there's this nitya and there's that nitya. So our difficulty will be that we don't see the principle, we'll see the external. So therefore, there's this religion, that religion, all these different things, and they fight with each other. But it still clears, okay, here's a nitya and here's naimittic. Right? Difficulty then comes is when you get to the platform where this udita vivek, the awakened consciousness starts to awaken. Then your nitya is dealing with both realms. You understand? Does that make sense? So the most important is that you're dealing with nitya, meaning that whatever you're dealing with is Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? So therefore you're taking the naimittic, but it's engaged in the nitya, so it's as good as nitya.
But it doesn't become?
Does iron become fire? It doesn't have to become. You know what I'm saying? Sorry?
Can it become?
Does it need to become?
No.
That's the point. Is it doesn't need, so you don't worry about it. Because if you're dealing with your conditioned nature, it's going to remain that way. Arjuna is a kshatriya. Whether he's in the beginning of Gita where he's not self-realized, or at the end of Gita and he is self-realized, he's still going to perform the naimittic activities of a kshatriya. But he's going to do it according to the nitya principles of spiritual life. Right? Does that make sense? So here, naimittic means the overall general, just means mundane. Then within mundane, you have what's daily and what's occasional. Right? Because naimittic means occasional, according to the time. According to time, he happens to be a kshatriya. Does that make sense? But at another time, he happens to be with Narayan Rishi, and he's a Brahmin.
But for this life, for him to be Brahman, that's nitya.
No. For him, the nitya activities is him as a kshatriya. Means what he does daily is a kshatriya. Like he gets up in the morning, he has his bath, he gives in charity to the Brahmins, he goes to court.
That's nitya.
That's nitya. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, things like arranging for war or stuff like that, that's naimittic, because you don't need to do that. If it comes up, it's something you deal with. But justice you deal with every day. You know, charity of the Brahmins, learning from the Brahmins, seeing that the people are protected, like that. Does that make sense? So the point is these terms are very specific, but at the same time as they have that ability to be able to be transferred from one to the other. That's why the Vedic concepts are confusing, because we want to go, okay, here's material, here's spiritual. But the point is it's only material because we think it is. You know what I'm saying? This rock is material if we see it separate from Krishna. We see it connected to Krishna, it's spiritual. That's where the difficulty comes. That's why the nitya and naimittic become confusing. But it's important to understand that's how it works, is all the Vedic definitions, because they're meant for bringing in line with the spiritual. Right? So they're always going to, they by necessity must be like that. You know what I'm saying? Because in the spiritual world, though we've called it all nitya, but daily they'll churn the butter and they'll clean the floors and cook. But you don't have to make cow dung patties every day, because you only have so much space on the wall, so you put them up, then they meet so many days to dry. So when those are dry, you take those down, you put new ones. So making cow dung patties is naimittic. You understand? So the principle applies everywhere. We're just saying, basically, there's spiritual and there's material. Right? So that's where the concept of nitya and naimittic comes from. Right? But then within it, then you have the detail of nitya and naimittic within the spiritual world and nitya and naimittic within the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So those devotees who practice sadhana bhakti, mm-hmm. which category do they fall?
They'll be in the udita, but they'll be at the beginning. You know, because udita here will go through neophyte, the madhyam, and uttam. So in other words, udita will go all the way through the frame. Does that make sense? So it has that ability to see. It's because you don't want to, means when you're dealing with the philosophy, you don't want to have totally different terms. Otherwise, it's too many terms, because you're dealing with too many different situations. You're dealing with someone who's asleep, and then you have basically four categories of social and four categories of spiritual. And then someone who's awake. Then, in the neophyte stage, those four categories of spiritual and material naimittic activities are going to be very prominent. Madhyam, they're going to be there, but it's not going to be prominent. And Uttama, it's only there if it helps with their service. But otherwise, it's not. You don't see it. It's not coming from that side. It's coming from the other side. Because there are Kshatriyas and Brahmins in the spiritual world. It's not a material concept. We tend to take varnashram and make it that varnashram is a material concept. No, the material, but it means material world is a material concept. But if it's a reflection, then it's reflecting what's real. So there is the Kshatriya culture in the spiritual world, the Vaishya culture, the Brahminical culture. There are Shudras. Right? Like that. So those elements, those are the eternal, but they're only useful, they're secondary because they're only supportive of the actual service. Does that make sense? But we like to categorize them very clearly. Now, when you get it where it becomes different enough, the situation, you're explaining the same thing in principle. But in detail, there's enough difference to warrant different vocabulary, right? Those are your variety of aparavidya. You know, your ayurveda, or your logic, or your grammar, or ritual. So you're explaining the same thing, but the situation that you're applying it in is different enough that you give it a different name. That's why then it appears, that's why the naimittic is more confusing, because it appears to be actually completely different areas. But you're only applying the same principle to, how you say, two different areas, but they're not technically different subject matters. Does that make sense? Like that. So, yeah. So, therefore, when we're talking about religious practices here, religious has the overall meaning, what is the inherent nature of something you can't change. So, that's why when we're considering something, you know, somebody has their rights, but they're only considering some facility. They're not considering the nature that they have. You know, just like we can say, well, the child, let's say he has his rights to his inheritance. But the nature of the child, what would happen if you gave him $100 million? You took a 13-year-old kid and gave him $100 million, what would he do with it? Yeah, he'd really, really waste it. You know what I'm saying? So that means you can say it's his right, but the point is it doesn't include his obligation. So the obligation is because that's his nature. Right? So if he has a right, that means he has an obligation. They go together. They're part of the nature. So what the nature is that combines that right and obligation, that's not being looked at. Right? So what's inherent, you can't change. So that aspect, that's religion. That's actually the dharma of the thing. So that's why it has its particular activities. So everything has its dharma. Like shoes, they have their nature. You're not going to change them. So they go on the feet. Right? You don't put them on the hand. Gloves you put on your hand. You know what I'm saying? And you don't put gloves on your feet. If you're a monkey, you could do it. But if you're not a monkey, you can't put gloves on your feet. Right? So therefore, it's just inherent. Now, what's missed is that a particular religious, now the manifestation of an activity for the particular nature of the individual or group of individuals and their situation, we make the distinction and say this is something totally different. You know, it's just like you have your English dress, right? Or your North European dress, European standard. But what is Europe like as far as weather goes? It's cold. So that's why they wear that particular kind of clothes. Means they don't. It doesn't have to look exactly like that. But constantly you'll see one of the common points about all of them is many layers. Right? But basically what they're just trying to do is keep themselves warm and look nice at the same time. Right? So they have to cover their head, they have to cover their throat, they have to cover their chest and everything. You see, that's where the most is. They got their vest and this and that. Yet there's only one pair of pants and there's only one overcoat. But underneath, in between, it's all in the chest. Because that needs to be kept the most warm. Right? But as you go farther south, it's not too hot, not too cold. You don't need all that. So therefore, they have a different kind of dress. Right? But people not understanding, that's because of the nature of the environment. Therefore, then there's a problem with it. Right? Because we're simply talking about weather. And we're talking about the nature of the person in that weather. Because if you took a different kind of person, you took the person from the Mediterranean, and he went up north, he would dress differently. But he would do like the northerners, that he would put on more layers. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But his dress would be that, therefore, if you went back down to the Mediterranean, he would be able to take off those layers and function there and still look good. While the person from the north, they don't have a system. If they come down south, they don't have a system. They either, you know, look like an idiot because they're not dressed for the weather, or they look like a slob. That there's nothing in between, right? Does that make sense? You know, you go to work in your three-piece suit, and then you come out and put on your flip-flops and your t-shirt and your shorts. They don't really have anything in between. It's not a gentle adjustment. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then accordingly, therefore, their food, their rituals that go with it, what's important to them, the particular modes that they're under, therefore, how they define what is to be done. Right? Every culture will define how the marriage arrangements are, or different, you know, according to the nature of the people. Does that make sense? Yeah. If it's more of a village environment, then the girls are more free in moving around. If it's more of a city environment, it's not. It's more formal, right? If they have a set place, it'll also be more free. If they're nomads, it's much more tight. You know what I'm saying? With nomads, they move around, they have their yurt, they have their this, that. You never see their women because it's dangerous. You're moving. At any time, anybody could come. So there's much more clothes. But in the village, you know the thing. It's there, it's set. Where the others are, people move around freely. So it will define the nature of how they behave. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So therefore, amongst all these, the Brahminical is the topmost. That's considered the best. Right? Because you're looking at it, you have the Brahminical, then the Kshatriya, then the Vaishya, then the Shudra. Right? But overall, as far as lifestyle, there's only Brahminical. So then when we say the Brahminical, then we mean the Vedic culture in general. So of all the mundane religions, the Vedic culture in general is the best. And within the Vedic, then the Brahminical is the best. So it's a lifestyle for everybody, so then some follow it more strictly, some follow it less strictly. That's up to the individual, right? Then by occupation, then the Brahminical is the highest. Then it gets down to Shudra. Then when you drop below Shudra, that accommodates everything else in the world, right? But because the nature of the human is to act within Varnashram, therefore even their subhuman culture has a reflection of the Varnashram. Right? So you always have your intellectual, you always have your administrators, you always have the business or the guys that run around and get things done, you always have your warriors or your systems or all these. So basically all cultures will have something. That's why you have, means language explains their culture, and that's why you can translate between one culture and another. Because it's basically common. Otherwise, a few words here and there, they don't know what to do, but you know, but it's unique to their environment. But in general, you can always translate. If you couldn't translate, then you could say, yes, you have completely different natures, have nothing to do with each other. But no, you have the same kind of thing. Everyone's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So it means, you know what I'm saying? And there's only 8,400,000 ways to do that. So, you know, there's common ground. Is that okay? Yeah.
The point of the mistake, which you mentioned before, comes from not discriminating the principle and the detail, losing that.
Yes, principle and detail. Yeah, principle and detail, but also being able to understand that this, you're transform. Our philosophy is, what is it? Yeah, it's been a long time. You have Vivartavada and?
Parinama.
And we are?
Parinama.
Okay. So parinama means transformation. You've transformed. So you're transforming the nitya, meaning the activity you do every day in the spiritual world, to the activity you do every day in the material world. What you do occasionally in the spiritual world to what you do occasionally in the material world. Like they only hold Krishna's appearance day festival in the spiritual world once a year. We do the same thing here. Right? Now it can reflect in its pure state, meaning that you're simply using inferior ingredients in the superior way. I'm using the material elements, but for spiritual purpose. Right? You know what I'm saying? Or I can use the material things for material purpose. So then it becomes perverted. Right? So it's either a reflection or a perverted reflection. Right? So the reflection is that it's used exactly like in the spiritual world, just as less quality goods. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so the mother's in the kitchen, she's cooking and all that and using the ingredients, and the kid's out in the backyard in the sand pit and they're taking things and cooking and all that. But they're the mom and they're taking care, you know, got all the dolls set up and sit down and eat and this and that. But it's the same thing, it's a reflection. Right? But perverted reflections, they put themselves in the center. Right? In other words, if we copy what they do in the spiritual world, you know, to please Krishna, then it's simply daily and daily. Right? But if we don't, then that whole concept of daily and not becomes transformed. It's all just naimittic. It's all just temporary. And then within the temporary, we call, okay, here's regular and here's, you know, occasional. Does that make sense? So we have to have that thing. That's the main importance. Is that, because see, knowledge is to understand our relationship with Krishna. So the most important is to understand how one becomes transformed into the other. Right? But at the same time, is because we have attachments for all the variety of mundane elements here, then if we can understand that in connection with Krishna, so that means you have to be able to translate something mundane into the spiritual. The definitions have to be able to match. And at the same time, is because we deal with a wide range of material. Ideally, you should be able to translate one material thing in, you know, in its principle into another. You should be able to see how you can be Krishna conscious while you're driving, or while you're eating, or while you're cleaning your house, or you have to be able to see the principle. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the aspect that we're, that when using these definitions, it's worthwhile to appreciate the definition, be able to see its broad range, and then the specific context we're dealing in. Much of the time, we catch a definition, but in one context. And then when we're discussing a different context, it creates a confusion. But the idea is to be able to see the principle so we can apply the principle to any context. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. So, because it means if the principle is seen, it's easy. Just like, okay, the mother is taking care of the child. Right? So, if she's in the house and everything's going nice, then it's a pleasant, interactive, and just saying that, you know, the child's happy. Right? But let's say you go outside, then it's a matter of protecting the child from the outside elements. So it's a matter, you want to keep them happy, but because of the context, more important is that they're safe. Right? Because you can only be happy if you're safe. So safety takes more of a prominence. While at home, safety's already been accomplished. Right? Does that make sense? So now you apply the happiness on that. Now, you're out in that, you're moving around, you're walking, so safety is, then you sit down, let's say, on a bench somewhere, so now safety is more prominent, so now you can work on happiness. Does that make sense? But when you're walking through a crowd or going up the stairs or on the metro, then safety is going to be the prominent. Right? And you make them as comfortable as you can within that. Does that make sense? So, because the principle is understood, the context is seamless. So that's what we're trying to get to with this vocabulary. If it's seen, then it becomes seamless. You can see how it applies at all these levels, just the context. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because here it's going to point out how the Vaishnava is able to see all this nicely while the others can't. Right? Those that are asleep will have problem with this. Right? You have the least problem with the Brahminical class because they're the top of the mundane. In other words, it's the closest to the natural form of the spiritual world in the way that the Brahman is doing things without attachment. He's doing things as sacrifice for others' benefit, for upliftment. So the spiritual world, the principle, that's what it's based on. But he's doing that, those qualities manifest the superior qualities for mundane purpose. Well, in the spiritual world, they're doing it to please Krishna, right? And his rituals then will have more of that kind of understanding. But at the same time, It's not that everyone in the spiritual world is functioning with Brahminical form, right? In Dwarka, they're Kshatriyas. There are Brahmins, but they're Kshatriyas, right? In Vrindavan, they're Vaishyas, right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're meaning. You have to be able to see these overlaps. They switch. So you have the Brahminical culture, meaning the principle of being uplifting. That's the same as the spiritual world. And then its rituals are the most uplifting. So it also is very nice in connection with the spiritual world. But as far as the activity itself, the pastime, then the activity of the Brahmin may be different than the activity of someone else. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see what aspect of the Brahminical is useful as spiritual. Right? Otherwise, then we take, okay, the Brahmin is the superior, so therefore anything else is not useful. No, no, no. What we're trying to get is that the Brahminical is the most useful, but why is it the most useful? Not because they, you know, play with water and little brass things all day. You know, that's the thing. You know what I'm saying? So actually, if we, you know, Barbie and Ken were brass, then, you know, the kids would be up on that elevated platform. We just have to add some water. You know, that's generally lacking. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's not that, it's that it's being done as sacrifice. That's the element that's the best. And why? Because that ritual automatically involves being detached. While other rituals, which are just as, have the same ability to be used in Krishna's service, we tend to see an opportunity to enjoy. See, the Brahminical activities, that's why we tend to call them fanatic. We don't call the Kshatriya activities or Vaishya. We never call Vaishya activities fanatic. There's never a time when that ever crosses anyone's lips. You know what I'm saying? They may say they're low class, disgusting, this, that, and, you know, exploitives, all these things, but they'll never say they're fanatic. You understand? The guy says, I'm doing puja. Oh, that's fanatic. Oh, I'm doing business. Oh, wow. There's never a time, you know. I'm doing puja, that's fanatic. Well, I'm doing business, well, that's also fanatic. So what do you do? I warm couches. You know what I'm saying? Warm couches.
Okay.
Someone has to warm them, right? They'll get cold, you know. Who wants a cold couch? Right? Especially if it's naga hide, right? That's really bad. Ever sat on a cold naga hide couch? Naga hide, yeah. It's hide made out of nagas. Popular amongst the Gandharvas. No? Actually, it is popular amongst Gandharvas. Artists always use naga hide. I don't know why, but whatever. So, where were we?
Fanatics,
yes, business. So, therefore, the Brahminical, what it is that it's the principle of mode of goodness, so therefore it's closest to pure goodness. Because goodness means you're doing it because you're supposed to. It's the authorized thing according to nature that is uplifting, is purifying. Right? So that's why it's important. Does that make sense? Right? But it's not that everybody has to be a pujari. But because every devotee is trying to make Krishna the center of activities, it's not that they can't do puja. Just because as an occupation he's a shudra doesn't mean he can't do puja. Because he's doing puja not as an occupation, but as his lifestyle, as part of sadhana. Right? But you will find that only those with a Brahminical nature can do puja 24/7. That you'll find. Unless someone by devotional service has advanced that the ashram element is the most prominent, then he could do puja all day, but that's because of devotion. You know what I'm saying? But the pujari, he can do puja all day whether he's Krishna conscious or not. Just like the businessman, he can do business all day whether he's Krishna conscious or not. You understand? Does that make sense? So that aspect, then you have to be able to discern. If you can't discern, that means we're not understanding the the advantages that are here. What are the refinement that's here? In other words, the intelligence is not very developed in this area like that. Unfortunately, due to then false ego, we don't want to buy this one like that. But because that's the disadvantage, that's the weakness of the non-Vedic culture, is there's such commitment to one's values, even though the value system is not based on authority. There's some semblance of the concept of tradition, therefore there is. Right? But other than that, it doesn't actually. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty with it. So therefore, coming into Krishna consciousness is the tendency to whatever it is you value, that's what's important. What you don't value is not. But that's the mode of ignorance. It has to be, it's not a matter of what you value or not, it's a matter of what does Shastra say according to Dharma, your nature. Right? I think that's where we started back before, is that you have the nature. That's why the Vedic system is defined the way it is. Right? So Brahmins are defined in that way because that's what they, according to nature, can do. They can sit and study all day. Now, if you want to sit and study all day, then what elements would be necessary?
Teacher.
But I'm just saying the ability to sit there all day in front of a book. The mind has to be peaceful. So that means, what makes the mind not peaceful?
Desires.
Distractions. Distractions. But what are the big distractions?
Senses.
But then applied in. I mean, we're looking at it socially, because here we're talking brahminical, so it's a social position.
Association,
yes. And so that, but what is that? What are people? Okay, let's throw it in this. What are people mad after in this world?
Money
and
sex.
Okay, I guess it is. Okay, here we go. Otherwise, it says here seems to be more of a brahminical crowd here. No one said power. You know. Wait till Gaur Purnima, then all kinds of people come, and then that's always the question: who's in control? Okay, so men and money, right? It means, in other words, you have power and you have money. These are the things that distract. So why can't the Kshatriya Vaishya sit down and study all day? Because they're thinking about those things. Now, if he's of a good character, good training, he'll be able to sit down some of the day and do that. But what time of the day can he do that?
Morning.
Maybe evening. And what is not happening in the morning and evening on a normal social day?
Business,
right? Administration business happens during the day, so you don't study, right? But morning and evening you can, right? So if the shows the system's going in a normal, balanced way, all the cultures follow like that. Early morning is for something, you know, better, and in the evening is for something. But the day, then that's, you know, that's business. Right? Does that make sense? You know, or then because you're so absorbed like that, then you require a break from that. Does that make sense? Brahmins technically don't require a break, because what they're doing is already nice. It's not an anxiety. You know what I'm saying? You see scholars who study all day, they don't need a break from studying. Right? But the trying to accumulate position and wealth and power, all these different things, that you need a break from, because that is gives anxiety. But, of course, one is comfortable with that anxiety, but still, it's natural. The more intense it is that way, the more the other way. You know what I'm saying? So the Brahmin may, what he reads, he may spend some time studying grammar and other things like that, and then other times spending, you know, poetry and things like this. So this way he can balance. Does that make sense? Okay, do we understand that this is, we're trying to define that there's an inherent nature, right? Now you have, but that's what we're discussing here, that's the condition, the naimittic. Now within that, then you have your what you do daily and what you do occasionally. And that's reflected from the nitya in the spiritual world, what they do daily and what they do occasionally. Right? Okay. Another name for a person with udita vivek is Vaishnava. Right? Because Vaishnava is actually awake. Anything else other than that, then there are various degrees of light sleeping or medium or heavy sleeping or, you know, slobbering or, you know, like that kind of thing. It's just various degrees. The Vaishnavas do not deprecate the secondary nitya karma of other groups. Because
deprecate
means speak badly about, or because they understand that the rules and regulations prescribed for the anudita vivek are meant for their beneficial discipline and eventual elevation. Because if you're not disciplined, you can't be elevated. Right? Because elevation is a gradual process. So only if there is regulation, right? And that regulation is based on authority, right, and good qualities, then you can be uplifted. Does that make sense? So even if they only regulate themselves once a week, but still, that's once a week more than others. Right? Does that make sense? And you see, the more religious, the more they regulate. Does that make sense?
Right?
Yes.
He said that Vaishnavas are open-minded and liberal because they appreciate everybody. That's
no, no. That's there, but what he's getting into here is that one has to appreciate that you're dealing with Dharma, because the idea is that you have to get somebody from whatever position they're in to be able to appreciate Krishna consciousness. So that means you have to be able to observe or understand the situation they're in, and then see how they can be God conscious in that situation. Does that make sense? Is that you know, like that? Yeah. So that has the whole point, is that So because we're trying, that's what we're trying to get into, is how to appreciate that. So it's that they're broad-minded, but that broad-minded is not sentimental. Like that. Because it's not like, oh yes, everybody. It's not that everything is the same. No, there is differences. Like that. But the point is those differences are due to the conditioning. They're not actually the nature of the soul. Does that make sense? You know, if you're in a pool, you go barefoot. Right? If you're out in the mud, you wear big boots. Does that make sense? You know, so depending upon what situation, you wear different kinds of shoes. You know, we don't say, oh, well, they're all the same, they're all shoes, it doesn't matter. You know, people wouldn't buy that one. You know, if you wear your big, you know, rubber boots that they do fishing in, you know, that come up to your waist, you know, and wore those to a formal occasion, you know, in a tuxedo, I don't think people would appreciate it. You know, especially if you wore them outside your pants, you know, like that. You know, or what do you call it? Flippers, you know. That would be really good. Tuxedo and flippers. That would. Okay. The essential direction of all the scriptures is the same. Persons with anudita vivek should find themselves rigidly obedient to the simple instructions of the scriptures. Right? So simple instructions. Because they're not very complicated. You know? Is it complicated? If it has a shell on the outside, you don't eat it. If it's got scales, you can eat it. Is that complicated? Does that make sense? If the hoof is in one piece, you don't eat it. If it's in two pieces, you can eat it. Does that make sense? It's simple. And these are the ones that we consider so strict. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, that's the whole point. They're simple instructions. Whereas persons with udita vivek should seek out and be attached to the deeper scriptural purports. Right? In other words, whatever ritual is there, it's what is the purpose of that and the deeper purports. So that's why the simple instruction is just what the direct what it says. Follow it. Because then you're following authority. Right? Even the rule is there that if you're following a made-up process, but the point is because you're accepting it as your regulatory system, you get discredit for not following it. It's not necessarily you get any benefit from following it, but you get reaction for not following it if you've accepted it as yours. You understand? So in other words, this principle of accepting authority is so essential to the living entity that even it accommodates bogus stuff. Right? And that you should follow it because this is what, you know, you join an ashram and they have their own made up rules, but you follow it. Does that make sense? Vaishnava Dharma is the living entity's Nitya Dharma. So that's the actual Nitya Dharma. So that's why it's important. Because some may say, oh, then you're accepting that this is superior and that, why that one, not this one? Because that's the actual nature of the soul. That's why it's accepted. Right? Means for an animal, no, they'll do this other thing. That's what they do. But for the soul, that's what they're supposed to do. In a liberated state, the Vaishnava devotee engages in the transcendental activity of unalloyed devotional service in pure Krishna consciousness. That's what they're engaged in. It's a detail what they're engaged in. So in other words, you can say, this is the nitya, and what particular rasa that they're serving Krishna through, that would be the general, the naimittic. So you're eternally in it, but in this comparison. Does that make sense? Because that's the difference. That's why if you can't appreciate this level between the nitya and naimittic, then you'll have problem appreciating other devotees. Right? Because every devotee is doing different kind of service. You have to be able to appreciate that.
Rasa is the
namitya,
like is the parental rasa, is the friendship.
It's nitya in that, but it's the one that it happens to be the. If you're looking at it on the position of this, it could be that, right? It means nimitta is the time, right? So therefore, she wants to perform those kind of services to Krishna. Those are available. Therefore, according to that circumstance, she's functioning as Mother Yashoda. But the advantage is in the spiritual world you can do it eternally. Right? Here you can't. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work like that. So here is that nitya, that's what everybody can do. So that means here one can eternally serve Krishna. Now you're using the naimittic dharma to engage in the nitya. Right? And of the naimittic, you have regular activities and occasions. So in the spiritual world, they have their rasa, and they have their regular activities and occasions. But the common principle that makes all Vaishnavas the same is that it's being done to please Krishna in pure devotion. Does that make sense?
In all these topics, the main idea is to get the right perspective.
Yes, to get the right perspective. Because perspective is how you will actually view things. Because I see the material world and I see opportunities for sense gratification. But actually, it's all Krishna. There are no opportunities for sense gratification. Because the point is it's Krishna and his potencies. Right? And the senses are working according to his potency. So I can take part in activities either from yoga maya or maha maya.
Yes.
Right? So the modes of nature will take care of it. You don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the devotee in the spiritual world doesn't have to worry about walking. Mm-hmm. Right? Yoga maya takes care of that. Just like here, the person doesn't have to worry about walking. The modes of nature take care of it.
Automatic.
Yeah, it's automatic. You know, so you have to worry about, is it connected to Krishna or not? That's the thing. And so we'll see an opportunity to think, oh, I can get some sense gratification out of this, but technically it's not present, it's not there. Means you can take part, engage your senses in that interaction, but actually that interaction is still connected to Krishna. It's functioning on the Brahman platform. It's still the male-female principle. And the male principle is Krishna, and the female principle is potency. And we can assist that. So it's never our sense gratification. But in illusion we think, I can get something from this. Why? Because I don't see Krishna in it. So it's perspective. Material means the perspective. We change the perspective, it's not material anymore. So we have to be convinced there is no sense gratification. There's only service to Krishna. Right? Now whether it's your service or not, that's the question. Right? Mother Yashoda doesn't say, hey, I'm going out with you guys today. And, you know, stuff like that. No, she doesn't do that. You know, it just wouldn't fit the rasa. Because why wouldn't it? All the coward boys would be making faces. Why? Because she has her nature. And it doesn't fit, you know, running around and yelling in wellas and playing with bale fruits and doing all that kind of stuff.
They are not liberal.
Hmm?
They are not liberal.
You could say, because it's not the nature. You know? Does that make sense? Like the popsicle decides it wants to go out, you know, on the construction site with its friend the hammer and, drive a few nails or something. It's not going to work. It's just not the nature. Yeah. So that's where this concept comes from. Even while still in a conditioned state, the Vaishnava devotee maintains his udita viveka, awakened consciousness, and pursues transcendental devotional service, acting in the material world. Right? So he's acting in the material world. That means you're interacting with the material world, means it's using all the material elements. Right? He accepts everything that is conducive to spiritual activity and rejects everything that is detrimental. Right? So what's useful means using it in Krishna's service. And rejecting means it's not to be used in Krishna's service. Or it could be used, but I'm not the one to use. Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore, it's not a matter of this activity is good or this activity is bad. It's a matter of what can be used for Krishna and not. You understand? Because we get into here, now we can see the application. Here he's talking about in general. But what's the general view of the brahmacharis towards the grihasthas? Or the grihasthas towards the brahmacharis? In the way of, let's say, sense gratification.
One group is sense gratifying and not
honest. Yeah, there's not. Yeah. So the one is, you know, not honest, and the other is just, you know, completely mundane. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, but what does that have to do with? The Vaishnavas do not deprecate the secondary nitya karma of other groups. In other words, the facilities for sense gratification is the facilities of the grihasthas. That's their religion. So therefore, the brahmacharis don't deprecate it. At the same time, not having it, not having to worry about it, then that's the religion of the brahmacharis. Therefore, the grihasthas don't say anything. Does that make sense? So the point is it matches the position. So even within the Vaishnava society, then it has to be applied. then broader, you know, within the, you know, the Vedic, the general, then within beyond that.
Can we say that Srila Prabhupada, this Pankaracharya, also extracted whatever is suitable for the meaningful
Yeah, just like he just said, after you go into the bathroom, wash your feet. He didn't say wash your feet inside the bathroom, then come out and with separate water wash outside. He just said wash your feet, right? One should find themselves rigidly obedient to the simple instruction. Right. Whereas person with udita vivek. Because the point is this, the simple instructions are what applies to the the naimittic. And the actual point of the nitya is going into the deeper scriptural purports, not into more technical rules. Does that make sense? If one's nature is more technical rules, then one would follow. Does that make sense? You know, if you're at your own house, you have a certain standard of cleanliness. When you go to someone else's house, then you adjust with that. Does that make sense? His actions are not hampered by superfluous scriptural stipulations, the do's and don'ts. In other words, he's Krishna conscious despite the external rules. The rules are there, he follows them, he becomes Krishna conscious. Or if the rule doesn't apply, he's not attached to him, so therefore it doesn't get in the way. He's going to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, it's serving Krishna that's important. So if that's your nature to do something, that would be the dharma to do, that would be the right thing to do at the time, that would be for that service, one does it. If not, one doesn't. Does that make sense? You know, because there's regular activities that you do. Then there's emergency. So much of the time we like to take the situations of emergency and this way get rid of regular. Right? But it doesn't work like that. In emergency, yeah, regular doesn't matter. But if it's not emergency, regular applies. He appreciates and executes any scriptural regulation that enhances his Krishna consciousness. Right? So he appreciates it and executes it. But it's not a matter of he deprecates. But if it's something that doesn't apply, then it doesn't apply. But if it applies to someone else, fine. You know, so we're talking about really being able to accommodate a lot here. It's not a matter of it's all, it doesn't matter. Because then it doesn't matter what you put where. No, it does matter what you put where. But the point is I only use what is useful. And just because I don't use it doesn't mean it's not useful. Because... Yeah. Nevertheless, if such regulations are detrimental to his spiritual progress, then he discards them. Footnote 11. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his book, Tattva Sutra, the divine knowledge is compared to the sun, and all the scriptures are the rays of that sun. The God-given self-evident knowledge of the jivas is the source of all the scriptures. The sages have received this self-evident knowledge from the Supreme Lord and recorded it for the benefit of the jivas. This recorded portion of this primeval knowledge has been manifest in the form of the Vedas. The Vedic teachings are of two types. In the Mundaka Upanishad 1:1-4-5, it is said, quote, enlightened souls say there are two kinds of knowledge, one, transcendental knowledge, and two, material knowledge. The knowledge of the Rig, Yajur, Saman, Atharva Vedas is material knowledge. The study of phonetics, rituals, grammar, etymology, meter, and astrology are all material knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is the knowledge that brings one to the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So in other words, philosophy is transcendental. Right? Everything else is material. But the material is to be, because you're going to apply the philosophy. So when you apply it, you're going to apply it through the medium of the material. So then the material becomes connected to, the naimittic becomes connected to the nitya. Therefore, it's as good as nitya. Right? That's why this principle of iron and fire, or simultaneously one and difference. Because you're taking whatever's in nature and connecting it to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Jiva is different from Krishna, but you're doing something to please Krishna. So simultaneously one with Krishna, but at the same time it's different from Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, you said yes, the knowledge of the four Vedas are material, it's not connected to Krishna.
Means anything other than the philosophy, everything's material. Now, apara means it's in line with the spiritual. Therefore, it's based on the same principles, uses the same vocabulary, same kind of common elements. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So therefore, it matches very nicely. Right? But, how do you say? If it's not used for Krishna, then it's avidya. It's just purely mundane. So in other words, there's spiritual, there's favorable mundane and unfavorable mundane. So if it's used in connection with the Lord, it's favorable. If it's not used, it's unfavorable. That's why then he makes this point, is that if it's not useful, if it's detrimental, you don't follow it. Just like the rule is, you're supposed to follow the mother, the father, and the teacher. Okay? Now, why is that? Because you're supposed to follow authority. And then higher than that, then you have that spiritual element, right? And then you have the authorities of the spiritual world, right? So that's the hierarchy of it. Now, if before you're not a devotee, but you're pious, so you're listening to your mother, your father, your teacher, like that, but you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, right? Now, it's supposed to be mother and father are teaching you about Krishna consciousness, right? The teacher is teaching you about Krishna consciousness. So if having come in contact, that's appreciated, it moves forward, it works nice. But if mother, father, and teacher are opposed to your practicing Krishna consciousness, then that lower application of the acceptance of authority is not important. It's detrimental. The acceptance of the higher principle of teacher there, meaning spiritual, right? And those who are looking after you on that spiritual platform, that's the higher principle. So the lower one may be left. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the parents aren't devotees and they're not supportive of, so that, you know, all the devotees basically the 70s, 80s just, you know, moved out of wherever they were, moved into the temple. It works. But when they moved in the temple, they accepted the temple authorities. Right? It means, think about it. You have the hippies that don't really accept any authority. Right? And so they're not living with their parents necessarily anyway, unless it's an advantage, but generally not, you know. So they're just moving out of that situation and moving into a situation where there's a temple president, there's a vice president, there's a temple commander, right? You know, there's a head pujari, there's a, you know, head cook, sankirtan leader. It's just, you know, unlimited authorities. You know what I'm saying? So that's because you're going from one, the mundane, into the spiritual. Because otherwise, why would they do that by their own nature? Yeah, yeah, they would. But it's they're following the high. But otherwise, they had their authorities. You know, this you know, musician or that musician, his lyrics or that one's lyrics or somebody's book. You know, this and that. Does that make sense? Gotta be something other than what you used to, something Middle Eastern or something Far Eastern, you know, could be also, you know, Indian, like that. You know, just something else other than what you do. Does that make sense? So some authority is there, but it's not, you're, it's speculative. So now you're giving that up. So you're giving up the normal social scene, you're giving up your alternative social scene, and you're taking up a higher social scene. Does that make sense? Someone can say you're dropping out of society. No, you're rising above society. You know, saying you're dropping out means you're going to something lower. No, you're actually going above it. So no one will complain about that. I mean, they do, but, you know, ultimately you can't. Although the Vedic knowledge is self-effulgent and eternal.
No.
It's after the two quotes, the Mundaka Upanishad. And then the next one. Although the Vedic knowledge is self-effulgent and eternal in the course of its journey through the different ages, it became associated with the various qualities of the different writers. Right? Because the writers wrote in the, you know, specific for the application that was there, so they used generally more direct application of a word that would mean that situation. Does that make sense? Therefore, the writer, you know, who's writing in Ayurveda is going to be different than the writer who's writing in Nyaya. So they're talking about the same thing. Right? In principle, but that one's applying it in one sphere and one's applying it in another. Right?
Everybody was writing according to Vyasa. Everybody was writing according to
Vyasa. Means according to Vedanta, yes. But their presentation is such that it accommodates all the varieties of situations. Then, based on that, then their conditioning, then some people take the particular position and apply that. Where were we going? Yeah, they don't see the Vedantic element. And so they only see the external, the mundane element, or what you can gain, because everything you do, it has its relationship, process, and result. So they're seeing the result they'll get, but they're not seeing why you want that result. Right? Why does the pujari cook lunch? He's getting a result, food. What's his purpose? Yes, an offering. He wants to make the offering. So now some people look at this and see his recipes, and then they start a whole culture of just this cooking thing. But they miss the point. The cook is to cook for Krishna. So they got the results. But because it's in that area, you know what I'm saying? Someone else is managing for Krishna. But they miss the for Krishna part and just see the techniques of managing. So then it starts its own circle. You understand? So the idea is that your whole day, everything that you do, can be connected to Krishna. So that means sometimes you're managing, sometimes you're speaking, sometimes you're doing ritual, sometimes you're being logical, sometimes you're being emotional, sometimes you're telling a story, sometimes you're following someone else's example. Does that make sense? Sometimes you're dealing with the body, sometimes you're dealing with your house. Does that make sense? Sometimes you're dealing with art, sometimes you're dealing with your animals. All this is going on in one day. So what we just mentioned here was, we just mentioned all the scriptures. Right? So that's why before it was one Veda. You read the one Veda and you applied it in your daily life. But because people can't catch that overall thing, catch the depth throughout the whole thing, they take it down and you're just an Ayurvedic doctor. But you should catch the depth there. But then somebody doesn't, so then they're an Ayurvedic doctor and just deals with Panchakarma, or just deals with Shushruta, or just deals with like this. And even then they don't catch the depth. The idea is to get the depth. You're following the simple rules, but you're trying to understand the depth. So that's why then the Vedic, the actual understanding has to be reestablished. Because Krishna spoke it to the sun god, he gets lost. So he has to come and speak it again. What gets lost is the philosophy, not the technique. Because Arjuna, he had celestial weapons, so it wasn't that the Vedic use of weaponry was at a loss. He was using weapons that the demigods themselves were. So he was up to date. You could say he was on the cutting edge of universal, you know, weaponry. It wasn't that he had some, you know, this is, you know, end of Dwapara, he had some old archaic stuff like that. You know? No, he had, you know, most up-to-date stuff. You know what I mean? Like that. No, not, that wouldn't not, that, that, if someone was in one of these, what do you call it? Intelligence, you know, agencies. If they had a toy that was an atomic bomb that you could set to blow up only, you know, 1 square inch by 1 square inch, and that's all. They would consider that a pretty developed toy, right? No? Yeah, you know, so it's like that. Or, you know, you shoot one bullet, and by a mantra you turn it into 50,000. Well, that's good. That's a good toy, right? You know? So, but he had all that. You know, so it was the latest stuff. But the point is that the technique, that is still there. What's lost is the Krishna conscious application of it. You know what I'm saying? So the Vedas deal with anything that could possibly come up in a human being's life, in any situation in the material world, and they can connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? But since that's so vast, it's broken down into all the various literatures, but it's the techniques for which you're supposed to be Krishna conscious. Yes?
Maharaj, to balance learning the category versus just simply engaging in direct devotional service is by association.
Yes. You see, because if you're going to engage in service, service means there's an activity. Yes. What are you going to engage? You're going to engage that external.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the difficulty is we either don't follow the rules of the external because we don't understand, or we follow the rules of the external and don't understand the Krishna conscious element. In either case, we're not understanding this connection that I'm Krishna conscious by engaging the senses in Krishna service. The senses means the senses and the sense objects. And the senses and the sense objects means a situation, an activity within that situation, and a result gained from that activity in that situation. Does that make sense? Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.8, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, thus, due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life, which are handed down through tradition, custom, and disciplic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoints. Right? Because all they're doing is taking the form. In other words, if you're taking the Vedanta aspect, but you're going to have to apply it. So you're either applying it using facility you have here, or you're applying it using facility you have there, in the spiritual world. Right? Now, the difficulty is what is the mix of that spiritual understanding and that material application? So atheistic means it's purely mechanical, right? And theistic means that it includes the spiritual aspect. But you may be very much distracted by the mechanical. Does that make sense? Right? The person's religious. He accepts his God. Right? He goes to his, you know, place of worship regularly. But he's very distracted by his making his money, his family, his social scene, his social status, his facilities, right? His health, everything like this. And so what does he pray for when he goes to worship? Those very same things. Right? So it's nice, he's theistic, but he's very overwhelmed by these other aspects. So the idea is that udita means you're awoken where this you're aware of that everything has to be connected to the Lord. So that's why I said Vaishnava is awake. Brahman, he's following the Vedic literatures, but it's not awake. Best of the sleeping. You know, it's like Kaladmars, oh best of the demons, you know, his father. I always thought that was, you know, saying, wouldn't he feel bad, you know, being called a demon? No, but the demons, that's what they call themselves. They are asuras. They're not suras, they're asuras. So it's like, hey. You know. Okay. Due to the mixture of defective sense knowledge, many types of infidel doctrines have come into existence in the name of the scriptures. defective sense knowledge. It means they're trying to apply it, and then they get something, oh, this doesn't match, and then they'll come up with some different interpretation. It's not meant like that, but they'll come up with a different interpretation. You know, you say God's in control of everything. You know, God made everything. You know, everyone's going, yes, nodding their head. So therefore, you know, yesterday this bad thing happened, so God's in control, so therefore God's at fault. And it's kind of like, wait a minute here. You know? So therefore, then you have to go, okay, so then, because we have defective sense knowledge, so therefore, because I'm going by just what I see, so therefore, okay, so God's in control, but he's not exactly in control. He created it all, but he's not actually managing it now because it's not working so well. So that means someone else has to be managing it. But the laws of nature are working really good. Even that bad thing happened, it happened exactly according to the laws of nature. You know what I'm saying? The tsunami came in. How did it come in? Right? From which side? The ocean side or the land side? Right, the tsunami came roaring down from the mountains. You know, it was really a bad tsunami. There we were, just looking. It was a fine, clear day, and suddenly we looked up, and there was the tsunami coming straight down at us. No, it follows the laws. So that's the thing. It follows the laws. So that's the thing. God's still in control. But because they don't have the understanding of the higher authority of karma, which you're not going to get, understand through sensual knowledge. Therefore, then if something's going wrong, God can't be at fault, so therefore, because God's all good, so God has to be beyond that, someone else is in control. The funny thing is, if that other person's in control, now the thing is how do you get out of the material world? It's God's blessings, but someone else is in control. So now, look at it. The jiva is able to actually, on their own, overcome an entity that God can't. And in this way, elevate yourself to, you know, the divine platform. So it's not a well-thought-out philosophy. Even they want to deify God, they still don't do it so well. Because still they put themselves in the center of it. And I'm the one that does it. You know, it's of course by God's grace. So by that humility, they avoid that. But still, it's got a defect here. And if God's grace can get you through, why can't God's grace get anything else? You know, why is it he can't run the place, but by his grace it all works out perfectly? It doesn't make sense. So that's the problem with... Due to the mixture of defective self-knowledge, many types of infidel doctrines have come into existence in the name of scriptures. Therefore, the self-evident knowledge, which is the universal acquisition of the jivas, must be followed as standard in the studies and discussions of the scriptures. In other words, transcendental understanding, that's how you have to view any scripture. Right? Does that make sense? Now, as I mentioned before, we don't bother studying other scriptures than our own. Right? Because if it's all given by the Lord, you know, you follow the one that you've been given. Does that make sense? Right? And if, because it deals with the transcendental, but if you have to interpret or understand something that someone's doing, it still has to be interpreted according to the transcendental nature of what the soul's supposed to be doing. Then it has some meaning. Right? Because then you can see, does this apply now or not? Does that make sense? If I'm going to go out and I'm just going to catch a sheep and eat it, right? Therefore, I need something that regulates. You know, no, you have to catch the sheep, offer it on the altar, then eat it. Does that make sense? You know, so that's why then these things are there to regulate what people are going to do. Does that make sense? But now the person has come across, and now he's actually offering, not because he wants to eat the sheep, but that you have to offer it to God first, or I want my, you know, son to get better, so therefore I'm offering a goat, or I'm doing this or that, or whatever it is. But I'm doing it actually to please God. Because in all these discussions, is it ever something to discuss God? I mean, to please God? You understand? It's not really meant to please God. It's more if you do this, he won't get angry. Because last time he got angry, it didn't work out good for everybody. You know what I'm saying? You know, earth opened up. People fell inside. It was not good. Right? You know what I'm saying? So you want to avoid this stuff. So therefore, do what he says. Right? But the point being, is, but if you're doing it to please him, he likes vegetarian stuff. So therefore, I don't need to follow the external element of it. I have to follow the principle of making an offering to God. That's actually what it's meant for. You understand? The idea is whatever you eat, offer it to God. Since you're eating a sheep, offer it to God. But the point is you're supposed to, the jiva is supposed to be worshiping God out of devotion. If you're worshiping out of devotion, why would you offer a sheep? You wouldn't. You understand? So therefore, it naturally progresses. That's why you have to be able to understand how one transfers into another. Otherwise, you say, I'm not following this religion anymore. Yes, you are. That religion is meant for developing pure God consciousness. So now you're actually following it. Because there is only technically one religion. That's God consciousness. That's Sanatana Dharma. Then there become so many others due to these different authors and due to people's misunderstandings of these authors. Thus, the independent cultivation of the self-evident knowledge is always necessary. Right? The independent cultivation of self-evident knowledge. So that's the Krishna consciousness, right? The divine knowledge is compared to the sun, and all the scriptures are the rays of that sun. The God-given self-evident knowledge of the jivas is the source of all the scriptures. So the understanding of the relationship with God and that service to God, that's the source of all the scriptures. Since the self-evident knowledge is the origin of all the scriptures, those who disregard the root and depend upon the branches cannot attain any well-being. Right? So in other words, the root of it is come from God to know God. So therefore, all the branches that come from that to reach out so that everything you're doing is connected, they can't take prominence over what the root, the purpose is for. Otherwise, then we water the leaves and don't water the root. Right? There it is also said, without proper understanding, one is simply trapped in a cave of the scriptures. By scriptural study, one must revive his own dormant spiritual knowledge. Then he may attain liberation. Okay. Thus, the Vaishnava devotees are the jewels of the earth. They are everyone's well-wishing friends and bring good fortune to this world. You can see, because they bring out whatever anybody's trying to do. No matter if it's a religious or social, because we have to understand, here religious means also, why is it in this place that people go and they shake hands? It actually goes back to the point of greeting and interacting. So therefore it goes back, that's the nature, how they are. Right? They're not that humble, they're not these things, so this is something that they can do. And if you go back, there's a reason for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you clink the glasses together or the toast. But if you go back far enough in history, it's that no one trusted anybody else to not poison them. So what it was is that you poured a little in their glass, they poured a little in your glass before you drink. You know? And then I guess when people found they weren't getting poisoned so much, then they just touched them together. You understand? Somehow or another, that one stuck. Does that make sense? So it all goes back, it had some reason, but now it just becomes the medium for expressing something or showing some camaraderie or okay. So the devotee is able to bring out what's the actual point in doing all that. That's why it doesn't matter where you are in doing that. You can start from there. But with time, you'll find that the natural lifestyle of the nitya, how you say it, the Sanatana Dharma, its natural form is more compatible because it's based on the mode of goodness. So goodness and pure goodness, it goes very naturally. So those things of passion and ignorance will just naturally drop off if one is looking at it in the proper way. Right? So that makes sense. I beg humbly to offer these points for consideration to this august assembly of Vaishnavas. Also, kindly forgive me for my mistakes. Vaishnav Das offered his prostrated obeisances to the gathering of devotees, then sat down quietly to one side. His dissertation had an astonishing impact upon the gathering of Vaishnavas, and the whole village reverberated with the sounds of eulogy to him. The inquisitive Brahmana singer tactically acknowledged the esoteric truths examined in the talk of Vaishnav Das. Standing with folded hands, he spoke off. Tactically means, well, one is that you could say he followed the etiquette because it was the appropriate thing to do. You know, now whether he's gotten a full realization from that, but he has to acknowledge and admit that it was well presented and well received. And since everybody's glorifying and he's the one that was the original question, then it would be the appropriate thing for him to acknowledge. Standing with folded hands, he spoke out, "Dear respected audience, not claiming to be a Vaishnava, I am nonetheless becoming a Vaishnava by constantly hearing Harinam. If all of you were to kindly enlighten me with your valuable instructions, then that would dissipate the many doubts still clouding my mind." Sri Paramahamsa Prem Das Babaji, feeling compassion for the Brahmana, said, "Please try to associate with Vaishnav Das as often as possible." After diligently tutoring himself in the Vaishnava philosophy, he is now fully conversant and has developed deep attachment and love for chanting Harinam. So now, after diligently tutoring himself, how did this happen? Right? It means we're not talking about a lot of time here. You know what I'm saying? But he had already studied all the scriptures. He had already come to the liberated platform. So now it's a matter of he hears from Prem Das Babaji, then he takes that understanding, that transcendental understanding, and applies it back into everything that he knows. And this way, he's self-tutored. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's exceptional, but this is the meaning of manana. Means he's done it in everything. So now he's been able to take it from the transcendental and apply it right down, in this case, into all the Varnashram aspects. And that means he's going quite deeply into everything. And he's going beyond Manu here. Because all the transcendental aspects, the spiritual world, the material world, the elements, though, but the essence of Manu, that transcendental, is what you're trying to get to, the Brahminical cultures. The highest Brahmins are the highest. The endeavors of the Brahman is what everybody should be supporting or trying to perform. So that he's gotten, but he's shown same time as it's still only useful when it's connected to the Supreme. Right? So that, like you said, is exceptional. But we can take it and apply it in whatever aspect of our life is there. So we hear something in class, we read something, we contemplate it and try to apply it, and then by applying it in the life, then it works. Okay. Upon hearing Babaji Maharaj's instruction, Sri Kali Krishna Lahiri, I guess that's his name, decided to accept Vaishnav Das as his guru. He thus approached Vaishnav Das, prostrating himself at his feet, and said, "My dear respected sir, kindly shower your grace upon me." Vaishnav Das reciprocated by offering prostrated obeisances to Lahiri Maharaj in reply, "I would remain always grateful to you if you were to look upon me with compassion." With a growing purple haze upon the horizon announcing the end of the day, the assembly stood up and dispersed to their individual dwellings.
It's a good end.
Yeah, for good end. It's a good end.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurakri.